What up, listener? We wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this Blue Wire podcast. Be sure to show your support to this pod by subscribing and dropping a 5-star review on iTunes, a follow on Spotify, or the appropriate dApp for any other platform you might be listening on. And if you're enjoying this show, chances are you'll like one of our 75 other sports podcasts. Find more shows you'll love at BlueWirePods.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
What's going on, guys? It's Justin here. I think everybody that's been following the Chase Down Pod over the last couple of years knows that while we are a Cavs podcast, we love the sport of basketball, we love the NBA, and we view the league through kind of the lens of our favorite team. So with the sudden death of a basketball icon, one of the defining characters of my formative years of learning the game, it's kind of difficult for us to talk about anything else. The Cavs ended their losing streak today. That was nice. We'll talk about that a little later this week. But I thought it was only right to kind of give a podcast to do a tribute here to Kobe Bryant. Fair warning, we're not going to be good at this. We do not have the kind of behind-the-scenes stuff or anecdotes that other people might have. But hopefully this can kind of be us weighing in on that, giving our own personal testaments and maybe a testament to the range and impact that he did have. So with all of that being said, I welcome my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, man?
Good. It was a very, very sad Sunday in the basketball world. You know, pretty much whether you're a Laker fan or someone who's been, you know, who loves basketball or is a dad or a daughter, you know, all that stuff kind of hits you and it hurts.
I appreciate that you went as a father of a daughter right off the bat.
I didn't, but I won't lie that it was a, you know, like, you know, I think that there's a reason people do that, and it's because they have to relate their, you know, it's become a meme, but there's a reason people do that, and it's because when bad things happen in the world, you relate them to your own experience. And
honestly, as a father of a daughter, was one of the first things that popped into my head. I guess we could start.
I mean, I was holding her in my lap when you know, I saw the news confirmed that his daughter was on the airplane or on the helicopter with him. And I started crying just thinking about her, you know? So obviously it's not about me and it's not about anyone, but the, you know, the families of those affected, but it is, you know, it's human nature to do that. And it's part of the reason it was such a sad day.
Well, see, I think it is one of those things, like it was a moment where I kind of truly got to understand the range of impact that Kobe Bryant had. I tweeted out yesterday, but even just going to get groceries here in Winnipeg, there were people in Lakers gear, people kind of teary-eyed. And I mean, growing up, I probably knew more Lakers fans here than Raptors fans. Those dynamics have kind of changed recently. But there are a lot of Kobe Bryant fans out there. And I think there's also just a human element that really connects for a lot of people. You look at the 9 people that lost their lives in just such a quick and tragic way. It's jarring. Like I don't know how you found out the news, but I was traveling to actually see my brother. I got into his house and the first thing that he said was that Kobe had died. And my mind immediately went to, there was a couple Kobes that went to our high school. I coached one of them that was in my brother's grade, actually. And that was the first place my mind went, because the thought of Kobe Bryant passing away, just it's so far out of the realm of possibilities for me. Like, it was something that I'm still having trouble kind of comprehending. And it just continues to feel surreal.
Yeah, I mean, surreal is the right word. It just, you saw that and you saw TMZ report it. And, you know, even though I didn't have any real disbelief, some people are like, oh, I don't buy it. Or, you know, I believed it right away, but it doesn't mean it's not surreal, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure.
Truly one of the, you know, tragic sports days we've ever had. I mean, Jose Fernandez of The Marlins, you know, that's another one that, you know, if you're involved, but, you know, Kobe's cultural impact was so universal. And, you know, everyone cares. You know, this isn't an NBA community mourning. It's about everyone, you know, whether you liked him or hated him. And I think the two of us took particular pleasure in poking fun. It's just monumental.
Well, I enjoyed hating Kobe Bryant so much.
And like, I think Kobe enjoyed people hating him.
You know what? That was really part of it. Because I look at it growing up and my basketball existence, basically. Like growing up, watching the game. Especially when you're younger, you need to have kind of that heroes and villains aspect to it. And Kobe Bryant was the perfect heel. And like that's how I'm going to remember him. And as the years went on and as he got older, I think one of the cooler things that we saw with Kobe Bryant was that he became more and more kind of self-aware towards the end. He would poke fun at himself. I think one of the great tragedies of the situation is that it seems like he made an adjustment I didn't expect him to be able to make, because he was always this kind of caricature of a competitor and copying Michael Jordan in every single way. But he seemed to have really made kind of that healthy adjustment to family life and towards self-improvement, which for this to come so quickly after he retired, before we had a chance to get a Hall of Fame speech from him, which is just, I can't believe that, because it would have been great to see him try to one-up Michael Jordan in that setting. But it's just so damn jarring, along with the loss of his daughter and the other family with him, the pilot. Like, it's just tough to comprehend.
Yeah, I mean, the second stage of Kobe's career was certainly shaping up to be interesting. I mean, he was really owning the mentorship part of it in a way that I didn't really expect. I mean, he really seemed to relish young guys. I mean, people forget Kyrie FaceTimed him in the locker room after game 7 in 2016. Yeah. Like, that's how close they were. So it's really, it's a shame. It's just, it sucks. But, you know, I think that's really my biggest takeaway is, like, you knew that the NBA community, like, looked up to him, but I don't know if I all the way understood to this degree how much almost every single player across multiple generations
and multiple sports, like
I mean, Neymar, Nick Kyrgios, these guys are all honoring him, and you know, they I mean, Neymar is, you know, a Brazilian soccer player, you know, like, not from here, never has lived here at any point. But Kobe was something of an inspiration to him.
No, absolutely. I think Dan Le Batard compared it kind of to when John Lennon died, where it was so out of the blue. And it was something that transcended sports the same way that his death transcended music. And I think one of the tragedies, too, is you look at other athletes and other people that have kind of left us too soon. I think back to Mac Miller or other people, other deaths that have kind of affected me recently. And there's usually some element of their demons getting the best of them, or there's something that could point to a potential downfall. And this doesn't have any element of that. This is just pure tragedy, pure
just senseless. Just
it's
random. That's the cruel shit, you know. Sometimes there isn't a someone to blame, or, you know, something to pin it on. It just sometimes bad stuff happens.
Yeah, and I mean, as somebody that often gets slapped with a big weight of death anxiety, confronting my own mortality yesterday was not a lot of fun. And I just cannot imagine what his family and all the families affected are going through. But I would like to pivot to the basketball side of things, because this is our connection to Kobe Bryant. This is kind of how we got to know him, got to hate him, and I think, at least for me, and it was funny because I was actually just tweeting about this a few weeks ago, just kind of missing Kobe's game, missing having him as that villain. Because Kobe was the benchmark, right? Like, for me growing up, got to watch LeBron come into the league, and Kobe was the measuring stick. And I think Kobe continues to be the measuring stick for so many players, because you get compared to Kobe Bryant. LeBron graduated to another level where he's now being compared to Michael Jordan. That's the discussion. But for everybody else, it seems like Kobe is that recent benchmark that we all point to.
He's aspirational, sure, for sure. And I don't know, maybe it's because so much of Kobe's late career rep was about his skill level.
Right.
You know, as his athleticism faded, and, you know, obviously he was a absolute skywalker as a young player, but, you know, really modeled his game after like career Jordan. And so maybe there is a bit of that aspirational quality. I mean, I remember at the peak of Steph, that was, everyone thought, okay, everyone's going to try playing like Steph now, because everyone can, everyone can, like, you know, not everyone can make them, but everyone can get up a deep three, you know?
Yeah.
And like, maybe there's a bit of that where everyone just saw this guy and his reputation for, you know, maniacal work ethic. Like, that's a really easy thing to canonize. And it just became very, very obvious that he was, as you said, the model for everyone. And people really tried to bring the parts of his game and add it to their own package. And, you know, to varying degrees, because even Kobe was always efficient doing what playing his way. But, you know, it's a clear testament to how beloved he was, and what a role model and aspirational figure he was for everyone.
So there's a few reasons why I feel there isn't going to be another Kobe Bryant. One, the kind of mythos that surrounded him, and the way that he was able to build up this character for himself. I feel like we get to see these guys grow up at a level that we've never had before. And we see through all the stuff, we've become jaded.
Big pass killed the radio star.
Yeah, pretty much. So I don't know if a guy could ever kind of embody that type of caricature ever again. And then his game, he kind of occupied a unique space. And we've talked about this before, where the illegal defense rules were gone. So teams were really kind of clogging up the paint. The skill level hadn't really adjusted to have the same outside shooting that we have today. There wasn't the same spacing. So guys like Kobe Bryant and Allen Iverson, I think they will forever be a little underrated by the people that just kind of look at the historic box scores and things like that. Those guys were workhorses that could take and make those tough shots that made everybody else's life a little bit easier. They would keep guys in kind of a more manageable role for their skill set and help them be more efficient in that way. Kobe,
the way Mello, you frame it that way, it's like no wonder that the best players of an ugly era of basketball played a little bit ugly sometimes.
Right, exactly. That was what you have to do. And I think we still see it today, where in the postseason, when things kind of slow down, Kawhi Leonard, great example. He was feasting on those mid-range shots. And I think that skill set, it gets forgotten about, not because people who say, oh, well, we missed the mid-range, blah, blah, blah. It's not that. It's that was necessary. That was the most efficient shot. That was what had to be done to get scoring. And I think that's something that doesn't necessarily translate to the numbers, but his ability to create space and create his own shot in those situations and in that space, I think that's one of the reasons people looked up to him, because he was just so technically sound that he was just always able to get a shot, even if you knew it was going to be him taking that shot.
Yeah. Yeah. The myth making was, it wasn't an accident, you know, like having the ability to create those shots and always being willing to take them. And, you know, I do think that there is value in it, in complete lack of fear. And you could always find that in Kobe. One thing I will say about Kobe, the most successful self-given nickname perhaps in history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember when Black Mamba got rolled out? Like a loud portion of Twitter was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And everyone is like, Mamba. Mamba forever.
Yeah, it latched on just a little bit better than the servant. I don't know if KD's ever going to get that one to to roll people.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the history of self-given nicknames is not littered with wins. But, I mean, Black Mamba was pretty cumbersome when he gave it to himself. And it ended up working. And now I like it, you know?
I feel it's because he's so unapologetic that's the only way you could sell that. Like, you would have to be so sincere and just embody kind of that Black Mamba persona. And I think people forget just how corny he could be sometimes. Like there's a lot of, Kobe and LeBron and vice versa in that. He didn't have the Zero Dark 30, but he had his grumpy mode, he would call it, before going into the playoffs, where you get the scowl. Every time he would break out the scowl, and the one series that still sticks out to me was me still in a vulnerable state after the Eastern Conference Finals in 2009 and just rooting against him so hard in that series. Because, I mean, you want to lose to the team that won it all, and Courtney Lee missing the alley-oop at the end and just the Magic missing all the shots they hit against the Cavs. And Kobe just with that scowl, like, it just drove me absolutely insane.
Oh yeah, I couldn't agree more. I will say, man, it's a bummer we never had LeBron and Kobe play in the finals.
Brian Windhorst actually made a great point about those puppet commercials. That was probably a large part of that was probably those two did not want to be in the same commercial with one another. That I don't think either of them wanted to be on film with the other one ripping the other one. It's the greatest rivalry we never really got.
We tried to make it happen so hard, and really, and in fairness, LeBron's teams were never as good as Kobe's teams.
Right. I mean,
like once they traded for Powell, I remember the first Cavs game I ever went to. It was Cavs Lakers in Cleveland, and Lamar Odom put together the most just completely pantsed Anderson Varejao the whole game. I think he put up like a 20-19-7 or something like absolutely outrageous. And so the Cavs just never could. Like, they just never could put a roster good enough around LeBron to give us
that. Lamar Odom was just absolutely incredible. And then it happened the other way, where LeBron kind of formed the Heatles there in Miami, and then the Dwight Mare didn't exactly work out for the Lakers. Not. And then, of course, he had Kobe getting hurt, and just everything kind of stops. Man, what really got me yesterday was, I'm sure you can relate to this, and this happens in so many situations, but when I see other players, media members, and people that I care about, which is a weird thing to say because a lot of these guys I haven't met or don't have a relationship with. But when you see how they're affected by it, it just translates to me. Like, I was watching Raptors Spurs. Obviously, Kobe had a massive impact on DeMar DeRozan being an LA guy. And DeMar having Kyle Lowry there for him in that game, the shot of Tim Duncan crying on the bench, like Lamar Odom, as we mentioned earlier, his Instagram post, and just all of kind of the outpouring is what really got me yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it hurts when bad things happen, and you know, it's sad for us, but I think the real hard thing to watch for me is watching other people hurt, you know, and the whole league is hurting. I mean, Larry Nance was crying on the bench tonight.
Yeah, he was. He had to go back to the locker room after the moment of silence there for Kobe. He needed a moment to kind of gather himself. And that's where you see the impact, right? Like, even Kevin Porter Jr., he's talked about how Kobe was his favorite player, and KPJ is among the youngest guys in the league. you really did have that kind of an impact. And you mentioned Kyrie earlier, unable to play, left the arena after the news.
Which I'm glad. I'm glad he...
Oh, me too.
I'm glad he just took the time. Because
I hope those two are the right people around him. But yeah, it's one of those situations where everybody's going to deal with it in their own way. Everyone's going to have their own opinions about Kobe Bryant. And I think all of that is fair. But I think understanding that, hey, some of these guys are going to need more time.
I felt about, there was the miniature controversy about whether they should cancel games or not yesterday. And I kind of was of the opinion, like, some guys are playing as therapy for them. But
right.
I hoped that every team made it very, very clear that if their guys, if any of their guys needed the time alone or with their families, that was okay. And it seems like the Nets were very accommodating on that front, which I'm glad.
No, absolutely. And the Lakers-Clippers game postponed. I think that'll be a little easier to find a different time to play that with both teams playing in the same city. I think that makes it a little more feasible. But I'm with you. It was actually kind of funny. We were talking about this in the Fear the Sword group chat, just Bayline's reaction to the news and just contrasting that to the rest of the team. I don't think he's ever felt like more of an outsider than he did in that clip, because you could tell he just didn't have that kind of personal connection to Kobe, and probably one of the only guys in the organization that didn't.
Yeah, I mean, most, if you're around the league, you either know him or you at least revere him. And I don't have much to say about Bayline's reaction. Well, it wasn't very very touching. But you can't expect everyone to have a emotional reaction if it's not there, it's just a big loss for the league. And I think that this is really going to be one of those touchstone moments that we'll remember when we're old. And I imagine it's not too far off from, me asking my uncles about Roberto Clemente dying.
Right.
So I think it's just one of those flashbulb moments in the league that, we're always going to remember. And it's I think Simmons said it's one of the saddest days in the history of basketball. And I think it's
probably the most shocking death we've had too, of kind of the social media era. And I don't blame people for trying to figure out exactly kind of how to eulogize this, how to put the more complicated aspects of this situation into perspective. Because obviously there's a giant elephant in the room. And one of the things that made me uncomfortable was I thought that there were people that have done it well. I thought Bruce Arthur did a great job kind of summing up the entire Kobe Bryant experience. Dan Le Batard had a great segment on Highly Questionable. Chris Herring, friend of the podcast, did a good job as well of bringing out the two major issues, which the alleged sexual assault in Colorado, as well as Kobe using a homophobic slur towards a referee. And one of the things with the more complicated aspects of the Kobe Bryant situation is we can never know exactly what happened, the impact it still has on the victim. But we did get to see the impact it had on Kobe and kind of the way he changed after those moments. You mentioned the whole Black Mamba rebrand. That was his kind of response to that situation and trying to make some good out of it. And I think it's on a case-by-case basis where you can choose to forgive. And I think you can either forgive or not forgive while still having an appreciation for the good that was done after that point. the fact that he was such a strong advocate for women's sports, and trying to make the most of his life. And I mean, it's so difficult because you never want to forget about those incidents and the, kind of those tougher moments. But for him to continue to try to work towards a better life and being a better person, and to have that part of his life cut short was really, really tragic to me.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, you know, this is why you have to, I do believe in being careful about canonizing people who die, especially in untimely ways, because you never want to mitigate any harm they did over the course of their lives, because, you know, then you're mitigating the victims. And I do think that it is worth, you know, I do think it needs to be part of any obit.
It's irresponsible to brush over an incident.
It is part of his story. And you know, how big of a part of his story you think you feel it should be is, you know, maybe it's personal discretion. Maybe we're glossing over it here. You know, we're certainly not experts in the field, but
right.
I do think that, you know, it's something that is likely going to get glossed over, and given the nature of what happened, and it's unfortunate that part of his story will go underrepresented for the victim. But at the same time, you know, I do think that it is part of his story. I think other parts of his story are how much people cared about him and what he meant to the community, and kind of what an interesting person he is. So I never know how to handle this kind of thing. And I know we probably sound pretty wishy-washy right now. We weren't the biggest fans of Kobe Bryant as a player, but I think really I'm grieving less for, you know, my lost experience with Kobe, but I'm really just grieving for, you know, his family, his daughter, and for the people all across the country who felt like they lost someone that they loved, you know?
And it's tough to reconcile.
It's very tough to reconcile, man.
Because you can't act like it isn't significant when it was clearly significant to him. Right.
And it doesn't feel good to even do that. Yeah. And we have to talk about it, you know, like that sucks too. Like that feels like we're just like obligated to talk about it instead of it giving it its due. I don't know. It's a really tough thing that, I'm sure other people will do much more profoundly than us, but
no, absolutely. And it's not on us or anybody else to dictate how somebody should feel. Like a great example would be Michael Vick. Like there are some people that look at what he's done since the dogfighting situation, and that's enough for them to forgive him, both in time served and all the volunteering and the money and effort he's put in towards various causes since then. And then you'll have someone like my wife who volunteered at a shelter where some of those dogs are kept now, and just there's nothing that can be done to ever make him not a monster in her eyes. And I think it's a case-by-case basis on how we kind of compartmentalize these different things, where people aren't black and white, and there's so much gray in the lives of everybody, and there's dark moments and there's light. And I think you can give credit to him for what was done in kind of the later stages of his life and as he grew up and mature without forgiving.
It's on
everybody. It's a case by case basis. And
one thing that I do think is I'm pretty comfortable saying is that gleefully celebrating this tragedy is pretty off limits, no matter what.
Yeah,
I think there was a small group of people on Twitter who did that, and
I think any retrospective of Kobe Bryant should include his flaws, but the discussion of his death really shouldn't, right? Like that should be separate. And I talked about compartmentalizing that stuff. This is a tragedy separate of any of the decisions he made in his life leading up to that moment. And I think that people should be able to make a distinction between. I know this was something that I wanted to do. I had wanted to talk through just kind of my feelings on the situation. Kobe was just such a massive presence in the lives of anybody that was a NBA fan. And I'm obviously included in that. And he's kind of a once in a lifetime character. He's a complicated character. And I think those flaws are part of the story. And the tragedy is what really still kind of has me shook up with the situation. Cause you think about the own issues you have with people that have mattered to you in the past, and kind of the risk that can happen in family, and the way that tragedy can strike at any moment. And it makes you think, what if something would have happened? What if I don't go out there and kind of reconcile? And that's something that I'm probably going to be wrestling with for the next little while here. And it's, I guess, one of the silver linings that can come in these situations is you see the way that people kind of band together, and the way that they can become closer from this experience. So I guess that's my main hope. From the situation is that some good can come out of it, and we can take this experience and take just another reminder of the way reality can be, and try to grow from it.
Yep, it's just truly horrible, but hopefully we can all just keep working on getting better and love each other, because as we know, tomorrow is never guaranteed.
Absolutely. Well, I said at the top, we were not going to be good at this. I don't think we were, but you know what? It still was good to kind of get off my chest here. And this is probably a good place to wrap. We will be back later this week to talk Cavs. Hopefully they win tomorrow, and we can talk about back-to-back wins. That would be fun. But there's plenty of talk about their trade deadlines coming up, so we'll have Cavs talk. And I appreciate everybody for your understanding of us doing another one of these. I can't believe we're doing two in one season here with both Fred McLeod and Kobe Bryant, two deaths that I certainly didn't see coming at the start of the year. Jesus. All right, well, Carter, thanks for talking this through with me. Thank you to all the listeners that stuck around and listened to our ramblings, and it's go out there, and if there's kind of broken bridges or whatever that you feel like you need to fix in your life, go out and do that. But love one another, and if you want to support the podcast, you know the deal: rate, review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, all that good stuff. I won't really, it feels kind of wrong to go through all of that. So thanks to the support. Thanks, Carter. Thank you to all our listeners. Until next time, go Cavs.